Welcome back to the Cape Fear Rundown. From WHQR Public Media, I'm your host, Camille Mojica. This week, we talked to Kelly about Development 101, a story to explain how development works in its entirety. Then Ben joins us to talk about how the county makes money that it's able to spend. Stick around. Development is a pretty convoluted, tricky thing to understand, so Kelly joins us now to talk about a story she's working on to help us work through it. Welcome back to the Cape Fear Rundown. I'm here with Kelly Kanoyer.
Hello, Camille Mojica.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. It's Friday. How are you?
I'm great. I had a sandwich. I love sandwiches. I also ate an apple. It was a great lunch.
It was a great day.
What a great day.
Yes.
Anyway, I'm here to talk about something related to development, go figure. It's kind of my beat.
Yeah, housing development. Development 101, though. It's like we're taking a class.
Yeah, that's kind of the pitch that I gave Ben earlier this week. And gosh, I gave myself a lot of work with that one. Because I basically am pitching, you know, Planet Money does a summer school where they're like, here's economics 101. Well, let's talk about development 101. How does this happen? What does it look like? How does the public get involved? What's it like for a developer? Which parts of the government are involved with these things? It's super complicated, and nobody seems to understand it except the people who do it.
The developers,
and sometimes not even them. They don't really understand all of the different touch points that they have with the government. So I thought it would be worth digging into what all of those regulations are and what they look like. People think development's gone rampant, but there are a lot of regulations that go around it. And there's also limits to what the government can do to prevent development. So I thought it would be interesting to show exactly how the system works so people can be more informed.
Okay, so who are the people that you're planning on talking to? It sounds like there's a lot of touch points.
Well, let's think about all of the things that we hear about with development.
Okay, yeah.
So whenever there's a rezoning hearing, you'll hear about stormwater issues, the impact that it could have on the school system and other related types of government services. You also hear about how it could get tied in with the electric grid or with CFPUA for water and such. And you get to hear about how traffic could be playing a role in this, as well as the role that development might have in economic development for the region or in the housing supply. So those are a lot of different things. And there's different experts for kind of each of those categories who get involved with determining what the development's impact would be on the community and what they're allowed to do and what they might be allowed to do if a rezoning is allowed to take place. And by the way, a lot of this stuff happens whether or not there's a rezoning. So for example, we look at traffic impacts and stormwater impacts whether or not a rezoning is required. So even if the public doesn't necessarily get a say because it's not going to change from the zoning that the property is currently under, there's still all of these things happening to make sure that the development is done correctly.
Okay, question for you. So the public hearing part where people are allowed to speak, that only happens when there's a rezoning that's happening for the development?
Yes, generally speaking, yes.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought they could always weigh in.
Well, I would say, from what I can tell, most developments in this area do come with rezonings.
Okay.
There's a comprehensive plan for the city of Wilmington and for the county that include details about what they expect the zoning to change to in the future. Mm-hmm. But the land has to go through a rezoning to switch to what the comprehensive plan says.
Yeah.
And generally speaking, the comprehensive plan is allowing for more intensive uses of property to kind of help with the housing supply in a lot of cases. So developers want to go with what the comprehensive plan says, or sometimes even more intense than that, and that's why they want to change the zoning. It means that the amount of land they buy can go further in terms of units, which is more profit for them.
Now, I get that development is a pretty big conversation in this region because of how much it is happening. But people seem to think that, yes, it's going rampant, that there's just new things popping up here, there, everywhere. I think maybe the misconception is that it's easy to just redevelop a region then because it's happening so much.
Well, it's not easy, but it's not hard either. And the government isn't allowed to say no, like
really?
Straight out. Yeah, if you own property, you are allowed to do things to that property that are within the allowed uses for its zoning. So even if you don't get the rezoning, if, for example, you wanted to do a development that's got a slightly higher intensity of single family homes than what it's currently zoned for. So you get, you know, 6 in an acre instead of the allowable 5. That's an example. It's not real math based on a real development. But that would be something you would go to a rezoning hearing for. And if the government says, no, you can't do that, then they might still develop it with 5 houses instead of 6. They might bring it to court to say, hey, there's no reason for you to say no to us for this. There have been cases where the government says no, and then they're brought to court by the developer, and they have to allow them to develop anyway. So the government has to be careful about rejecting things that are sound uses. And generally speaking, if it's allowed, it's allowed. So that's a zoning thing. And generally speaking, this region needs to plan for growth because the population is coming. Mm-hmm. And so having that zoning available for people to more intensively develop so that there's more housing for all the people who are coming, that's kind of the idea with the comprehensive plan. And so that's what developers are doing.
All right. Developer 101, school, summer school. Why are you doing this story?
So I initially got this idea because I've talked to a few developers who take issue with the red tape they think they experience in the local government. And when I drilled down into it, it's really that there are expectations that the government has on anybody who does intensive development. So it's the traffic impact analysis that comes with the requirement for people to build infrastructure. So a lot of the things that developers consider red tape that they are frustrated by are things that are mitigating the impact of these new developments on the community. Mm-hmm. So really, there's sort of this democratic process happening. I'm using the exact words of Scott James from the WMPO here. It's a democratic process where locals are able to say, hey, this neighborhood hasn't had this massive development next to it, so we're worried about the traffic impact. And then there's a traffic impact analysis, and the WMPO and NCDOT say, in order for you to not really harm the next door neighbors, mm-hmm. you need to put in a signal, like a traffic signal, and then the developer has to build that traffic signal. So they're creating new infrastructure to deal with growth on the dime of the private investor.
Oh, okay.
The private developer. And I think that's the part that people don't think about. They're just like, oh, this development's causing all these problems. Well, you might get a new traffic signal that kind of helps deal with the traffic you're already dealing with because of this development. You might see new turn signals going in, and you might see new school infrastructure even. That's happened as well. So there are benefits to the neighbors that come along with some of these developments. They don't necessarily see it that way most of the time, in my experience, but that's kind of how government officials look at it. They're trying to get what they can for the broader community out of the developers as the developers are doing what they are allowed to do by right. So the reason I wanted to tell this story is because I think that that kind of stuff just gets lost in the weeds. It's such a complicated process to understand how development works. Only developers and the people who work directly with them all the time really understand the full process because it's so complicated. And there's a lot of people who end up caring about development that comes into their areas. It was one of the top issues we heard about when we did the community agenda last year, and nobody really understands how it works. I cover this stuff, and I have trouble understanding the entire process because it's lengthy and complicated. It involves up to 14 different government agencies. I mean, we're talking stormwater, we're talking traffic. That's 2 different entities with just traffic, NCDOT and the Wilmington Metropolitan Planning Organization. And then the county, the city, whichever city or county it is. Sometimes there's places that are on the border between the two, and so they have different expectations for different halves of the property. It's insanely complicated. And that's for a reason. These are really permanent things that are going in. They last for 50, 60 years, and the infrastructure is there kind of in perpetuity. So it's important that there's all of these expectations going into it, I think, but nobody understands how it works. So the 101, the idea here is, okay, so you're worried about stormwater. Here's what stormwater actually looks like for every single development that's being built in this region. This is the process, this is what it means, and this is what we expect. I think people started really paying attention after Florence to the way stormwater works, but our government's been thinking about this for decades and has been careful about it for decades. And that's definitely worth understanding when you go into these meetings and you're concerned about the development going next door, like actually knowing what the impact could really be of that development and knowing how the government is playing a role in determining that.
What does the timeline look for this overall story?
I'm staring into the microphone because I'm overwhelmed by the number of people I need to talk to. I've talked to folks at the WMPO and NCDOT. I really need to talk to folks at the city and the county still. Those are the main ones, I would say, that I need to really get in touch with. And it's going to be multiple people because there's different departments for a lot of these different things. So I'm already in touch with Alex Riley, the public information officer at the county. And he's actually really excited about this because it can be an ongoing resource. You know, it's not about one development. It's how development works overall. So yeah. He can just send the article to people. And I don't usually try to provide resources for government officials, but in this case, I'll make an exception. I think it's valuable to a lot of people.
Yes, I think so, too. Well, Kelly, thank you for being on the show with me this week, and we're looking forward to development summer school.
Thank you.
Ben joins us now to talk about the different ways the county makes money that it's able to spend. Welcome back to the Cape Fear Rundown. I'm here with Ben Schockman. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Cammie.
The county has a lot of money.
My goodness. Yes, it does.
Yes. Where is the money coming from, though?
Yeah, the money is coming from a lot of different places. So everyone talks about taxes. They're meaning property taxes.
Okay.
And that is a huge chunk of the county budget. I mean, if you look back at the last couple of years, you know, over $200 million.
Oh, that's a big difference.
Yeah, but the operating budget of the county has been somewhere north of $400 million for a long time. Now, you'll hear people throw out bigger numbers, and this could be for a different rundown. You know, last year we talked about this a little bit, how some people were saying, you know, the budget was $600 million. Some people were saying it was $450 million, because it depends whether or not you're including, like, capital spending.
Okay.
Like, if the county is building, I don't know, a brand new library in Cape Fear Museum, and it's doing that with money from a loan, do you include that in the budget, or do you just include, like, what it takes to operate the county?
Okay.
But that is a funding source. So if you look at the biggest possible version of the budget, the most all-inclusive, it includes all the money that's coming in and out of the county, it includes money from bonds, which are basically just...
I was going to say, what is a bond?
A bond is basically the county sells... It's almost like the county is... This is a metaphor, you know, because I'm not an economist. I don't know exactly how this works. It's effectively the county is selling a share in itself that it will pay back.
Okay.
So you can buy bonds on the market.
Yes.
And invest in them, and you get your money back plus some interest. And they're very reliable. The low interest rates, you're not going to make 20% interest on a county bond, but they're incredibly reliable, especially New Hanover County. It has like a AAA+ rate because it's a very stable financial institution as a county.
Yeah.
It is not going anywhere. It's not going to fold. It is one of the safest possible bets.
Okay.
So the county can basically have bonds sold on their behalf, and then they get money, which they then slowly repay over years.
Okay.
And so at any given time, the county could have tens, even hundreds of millions of dollars of bonds out there. So that's another major source of revenue. But most of that money goes into big projects, like building stuff.
Okay.
With cities, you know, you'll see like transportation bonds to build roads. Counties in North Carolina aren't allowed to build roads, because historically they were terrible at it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, they were very bad at it. And so they weren't allowed to do it anymore. But they do build other stuff like schools and libraries and so on and so forth.
Okay.
So you do see money from bonds. You do see money from property taxes, which you'll see jump every 4 years. Next year, just put a pin in this, you will see some funky math with this property tax money. There's a good chance, I can't guarantee it, but there's a good chance you will see people talking about lowering the tax rate, but people's tax bills will go up. We had to deal with this in 2021. Kelly Knoyer had just come to the station. We had to sort all this out because the county was saying, hey, we've lowered taxes. But people were saying that's – I can't say it on the rundown, but
– that's nonsense.
They disagreed because their tax bill was going up. And what happens is every 4 years, the county – does a massive project where they go to every parcel, every property in the county and figure out what it's worth.
Every single one?
Every single property. And it's pretty close to the market value, more or less, on average.
Okay.
And so, but they only do it every 4 years. So 4 years ago, the county rolled out new property values that were 33% higher than they had been in the previous cycle.
Oh.
So everyone's property values went up.
Oh.
So a lower tax rate still made more money for the county. It's a little bit of kooky math. So you're going to see that again in 2025. So even if someone says, hey, taxes are going down, your tax bill may not go down.
Okay.
So that's another form of money. Then there's sales tax. People forget about sales tax.
I know. I totally did.
Well, everyone does. And it's not inconsequential. So, you know, looking back over, you know, fiscal year 22-23 and fiscal year 23-24, both of those years, property taxes were around $220 million.
Okay.
But sales tax was over $100 million both those years. We saw a little bit of dip during the pandemic because people bought less.
Okay.
But $100 million or more.
That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. And, you know, especially for a place like Wilmington, we're at the beach, a lot of people, you get a lot of tourist income.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge revenue generator. Then you've got a lot of other little ones. There's, you know, people talk about fees for services, whether that's, you know, charging money to drop stuff off at the landfill or...
Oh, those fees.
Or getting a building permit. All of those add up. It's not a huge amount, but it's like over $10 million.
I know we're saying it's not a huge amount.
It is.
Because we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars for a budget.
You have to see this at the Godzilla Kaiju scale. Because to me, if I was making... Let's look at the most recent year here. $14.7 million, right?
Gets a lot of money.
That's actually the line for other revenues. Just like randomly other revenues.
That's it?
Is over $10 million. The,
wow.
The charges for services and stuff was around 12. It's steadily between 12 and $13 million.
Okay.
But yeah, I do understand that how crazy it sounds to say... A mere $13 million.
Not that much.
And then you get, you know, a considerable amount of money that moves around between other governments. So, you know, from the state and the county city and the county. But those are the big ones. And then there are some targeted taxes. There's, you know, for example, the county recently rolled out a stormwater department. It's basically like a utility. It's set up to work like a utility.
Okay.
So the idea of a utility is they can't charge you more than it costs to run the utility.
Okay.
You know, it's not like Duke can put money away because they're a private energy company, right?
Yes.
So they can save up money for R&D, investing in new ideas, or just to, you know, some private, you know, power companies can pay back shareholders.
Yeah.
Like Cape Fear Public Utility Authority has to make enough money from fees, from the cost of water, to run the system that exists.
Because it's a public utility.
Because it's a public utility, and they can charge a little bit extra for future infrastructure developments,
okay.
But they have to have a very clear plan of how they're going to do that.
Okay.
So the stormwater utility is like a utility. It's, you know, the county used to have its own water and sewer. Now it's part of CFPA, which is a, you know, it's sort of a standalone quasi-governmental. But the stormwater is basically, it's literally paying people to make sure that like the creeks and streams are clear of debris to help plan with how we do stormwater management. And a lot of this came out of the aftermath of Florence when especially places like Ogden and Porter's Neck, where there is like this ancient system of like creeks and channels and gullies just completely had been just full of detritus because there had just been a hurricane.
Yeah.
But also because like they had gotten jammed up over the years. No one was really sure who was responsible for making sure the culverts and all that were clean. Now we have someone who's in charge of that and there's a tax for that.
That everyone has to pay?
There's a fee for that. Yes, you pay that. They waived it for the first year, maybe two. I think they used some COVID money, but now it's like you get a bill for that.
Okay.
There's also in some parts of the county, you get a fire service tax.
Why?
So that you can have fire service. No, there's like a specific tax and you can see like, hey, this is, you know, so that we can fund, you know, our fire departments here and here.
Yeah.
And we were talking about in the newsroom how interesting it would be if there was like a police tax, like a sheriff's office tax.
Oh, so if you did not pay that tax, then you would not receive the service.
I don't know what would happen, but I think it would be interesting if people saw how much of their taxes is from law enforcement.
Interesting.
Yes.
Okay.
So those are the big ones. And people have asked, how can we see this stuff? You've got to dig a little bit. It is hard to find this stuff. You need to go to the county's website and look for the budget, and then you've got to search for revenue. To give you an example, in the 363-page budget from last year, right?
Okay.
This was the most recently adopted budget. So that was fiscal year 23-24. We're going into fiscal year 24-25. Because why would we use calendar years? That would be too easy.
It would make too much sense.
We have to use a calendar that starts in July. We just have to. I'm sure there is a reason, and we should ask a journalist about that. But for now, that's when the fiscal year starts.
Okay.
For them. So you got to go down to page 124 out of 363 pages.
Wow. Just to see where the revenue's coming from?
And then you can see the different revenue streams. And they're not hiding it, because you can do a control F, and they've got a nice little pie chart where you can see sales tax is about a quarter, ad valorem taxes, that's property taxes, is about half.
Okay.
But if you want to see where that money's coming from, you've got to dig. New Hanover County is also a special little boy of a county. We're very small, but we have a couple other bonus monies.
From where?
Glad you asked, Kemi Mojica. So we've got a bunch of bonus monies. Now, every county in New Hanover, in North Carolina, in fact, most counties around the country, all have a tiny piece of the opioid settlement that that you've done some reporting on.
Yes.
And this is from, Purdue Pharma, but also a bunch of middlemen and manufacturers and distributors. And so we've got tens of millions of dollars over 18 years to spend. It's in its own dedicated fund. We get little tranches from the state every year.
Mm-hmm.
There's some rules and regulations around how you can spend it. In other states in the past, there was also, there was tobacco settlement money. So it's a similar idea. They're trying to do it better this year. I will say John Oliver did a segment on this last week tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And shouted out North Carolina, because we are one of the most transparent states about how we are using our money. There's actually an online dashboard where you can go and see each county, how much they got, and what they're using it on.
Yeah.
So kudos. I don't usually say this.
Good job, North Carolina.
So we've also got a bunch of money from the hospital sale. And people will also say, didn't the hospital sale money go to the endowment? A whole other podcast. And yes, it did. But if you math the math, they got paid $2 billion for the hospital by Novant Health.
Okay.
$1.3 billion went to the endowment.
So where's the other 0.7?
Great question. A chunk of it went actually to Novant itself. To the hospital to kind of make sure that employees got taken care of.
Okay.
And then $350 cash went to the county. $350 million cash. Mere $350 million. No. And so that further got divided. $50 million went to I believe it's called the Mental and Behavioral Health Fund.
Yes. And the county does have that.
Yes. And you've done some reporting on this. And then there's the big mama, the $300 million of revenue stabilization money, which is what the county is arguing about or debating about right now, about whether or not to use it mm-hmm. to patch their budget hole.
Yes.
There are a lot of philosophies about what to do with this. The most fiscally conservative version of this is don't touch it.
At all. Okay.
Under any circumstance.
What is it for then if you don't touch it? Rainy day?
Emergencies.
Okay.
Exactly. Literally rainy days. And one of the things, in the past, Commissioner Jonathan Barfield has mentioned this. Other commissioners have also said this. In the event of a hurricane, the county has to spend its own money to repair stuff. And then they get reimbursed by FEMA.
Okay. But they still have to spend their own money first.
Yes. And we've seen after Florence, we saw some counties ran out of money.
Yes.
And had to stop. We're like, we can't keep doing this.
Okay.
So some commissioners have suggested, maybe taking a chunk of this and making that only for storms. But that's one of the things you can do with this $300 million. And you could just leave it there. And every year it makes interest. It makes a chunk of interest.
Oh, it does?
Oh, yeah. And so you could just take that interest and just grow this.
Now, a
more middle-of-the-road option is, okay, well, let's use the interest. Let's not touch the principal. But we're making millions of dollars a year in interest. We should put that in the budget and spend it.
The interest, okay.
Spend the interest. And that's what the county's been doing.
Currently. Okay.
So every year in the budget for the last couple of years, the interest in that $300 million has been part of the mix. It's been part of the budget.
Okay.
And You know, so it's not from the quote unquote general fund. It's from the our revenue stabilization fund.
Okay.
And in theory, now initially it was just a chunk of money that the county had. Commissioner Rob Zappel and some other commissioners had a debate about whether or not we should make that a little harder to use
mm-hmm.
than the rest of the money from the general fund. Like, it only takes 3 out of the 5 commissioners to approve a budget. But it takes 4 out of the 5 commissioners to approve using that $300 million savings account.
Okay.
And so right now, County Manager Chris Coudray has suggested, hey, what if we use a little bit, and by that I mean a mere $7.7 million,
yes.
from the Revenue Stabilization Fund to patch up our budget shortfall for this year. But you got to get 4 commissioners to do it. And right now there's 2, Dane Scalise and Leanne Pierce, who are kind of like, yeah, kind of don't feel like we should touch that.
Yes. Okay.
And so that's going to be a tough conversation because they're running out of time to finalize their budget.
Yes.
But that is another place that money could come from. And in theory, you know, I've heard every suggestion for that money under the sun. I've heard that they should just use it to defray taxes or cut taxes in half for a year.
Okay.
Like, do a tax holiday. You know, if the total budget – so, I mean, again, looking at the most recent budget, ad valorem taxes, so property taxes, right, made up I'm rounding up a little bit, $230 million.
Okay.
So you could just say, you know what, in fiscal year 25-26, so next year, no taxes for anyone. Everyone gets a tax holiday. Take a break, pad your savings account, get that spare tire,
yeah.
you know, fix that back windshield you've been meaning to fix.
Yeah.
I've heard that suggestion. I don't know how popular that would be, but that's like the most, just give the money directly back to the people.
Okay.
I've heard, you know, let's find one huge project and do that. I've definitely heard people say, we should just build a bridge.
Okay.
Let's build a damn bridge. You know, and then all the way on the other side saying, you know, we should never touch it. We should just keep taking the interest, put it back in the principal, let it grow.
Okay.
Compounded interest is a beast. And that money would just keep growing.
Yeah.
So that's, you'll hear that debate about what to do with that money.
Okay.
So those, I think, are all of the monies.
That's a lot. And many different places that they're all coming from.
It comes from all over. And, of course, for the last couple of years, we've had ARPA, so COVID relief money at the county, and at schools we've had ESSER, which is, again, COVID relief money for the schools. So that was an additional layer. So at one point, looking at, and this is this coming year, there's still some ARPA money in the county budget. There's still some COVID relief money.
Oh, okay.
That they have to spend down that will last the rest this coming fiscal year, but then it'll be done.
Okay.
So this year, we're looking at federal COVID relief money, opioid settlement money, possibly revenue stabilization fund, mental health fund, taxes, property taxes, sales taxes, fees, like small taxes, utility fees. It is bonkers. And I have to say, we do a lot of coverage of the budget and people criticize the budget a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But just in terms of logistically putting this thing together, my head would explode.
And that's County Manager Chris Coudray's job, correct?
County Manager Chris Coudray is largely responsible for doing this. In fact, this year we're seeing commissioners taking a little bit of a heightened interest in getting into the nitty-gritty, into the granular line by line.
Yes.
But basically, this is the work of Eric Creedle, a very smart guy who's been very generous with his time in the past explaining how some of this stuff works. And so Eric and Chris put a lot of this together, and they rely on their department heads to sort of figure out what they cost. But in terms of, like, plugging all the things into the – yeah, that's them. And that's – it's a lot of work.
That is a lot of work.
Yeah. And a lot of money. A $500 billion or more. No, that's not right. $500 billion or more.
Yes.
There we go. It's easy to get lost up here in the upper echelon of dollars.
Yes, it is. Well, now I'm glad that we have a pretty good picture of where all the money comes from, because I know myself, I thought that it was only coming from property taxes and fees. Like, you know, like the trash fees and things like that that they take from people living within the county. But I didn't realize it was that many different areas that were contributing to the money that they can actually spend.
It's like an octopus of money.
So many different arms.
Somewhere a libertarian just had the worst nightmare of all time. I'm very sorry.
Ben, thank you so much for being with me on the show this week.
Happy to do it.
Thank you so much for listening to the Cape Fear Rundown. check out our show notes for relevant links and titles to the music we use this week. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, or just general feedback, feel free to get in touch. You can shoot me an email at cmojica, that's M-O-J-I-C-A, at whqr.org, or you can find me on X at Cameo Reports. I'd love to hear from you. I'm your host, Camille Mojica, and I'll see you next week.